This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. This is, I think, our fifth show, and hopefully we're starting to grab ourselves a little audience that tunes in every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. here at the AM 970 The Apple. The show is about reporting about disasters in our area and on a national standpoint, and we also like to give you the tips and tools and tricks of the trade, if you will, on how to handle if such emergencies happen. And those emergencies are fires and floods and obviously natural disasters such as earthquakes. And I haven't been in an earthquake. It's probably the only national disaster I haven't gone to and done work, some mitigation work at. But like I said, fires and floods, interior collapses, fair amount of in our region, New York City area, Jersey, New York City, Connecticut, and out there on the island too. You have interior collapses, and we've been on some of those types of jobs too. If you haven't known it, it's September, and this is National Preparedness Month. I know there's the websites around. You ever see the blogs and whatnot about being prepared? And that's one of the things we do here. I'm kind of a broken record, and I always talk about being prepared and having the things in place for when emergencies, or we like to call it disasters, happen. Because degrees of disasters, one person could have a fire in their home or their business, and they take it in stride and they say, okay, I have a plan in effect, and I'm going to execute it, and I'm going to call this guy, call that guy, and so on and so forth. But then you know what? There can happen a little flood, a little leak in somebody's basement, okay, and they don't have a so-called preparedness solution for that. So that's a disaster for them, So again, there's degrees of disasters. So regarding our September, unfortunately, we have a couple of anniversaries coming up. We have, unfortunately, downtown, the 9/11. And also a couple of days ago, it was the fifth-year anniversary for Katrina. I want to touch bases on both those in a few minutes. Regarding downtown, I think it's 9 years coming up. And I was downtown, unfortunate to be there because of the situation, but fortunate because I met some good people who honed my skills in the mitigation world and the sense of urgency and taking care of people. And, on a whole, downtown was for me, it was nice to see that, as Americans, we saw what was really important. We got together, we worked together, and, there was a common goal. I think on a daily basis, just my opinion, that, that gets lost in the daily shuffle of getting the kids off to school and going to work and doing the ABCs of living your life. So, then we also have Katrina, the 5 years after that. Now, I didn't go down there. I did work the year before with the hurricanes down in Florida. And I saw some of the calamities that were happening down there on a local standpoint, on a state level, and also on the federal level. I thought I did my right duties, if you will. I was helping some people out during these emergencies. People whose homes were just completely obliterated, and they were living in those FEMA trailers. Hopefully, I wasn't in there with the formaldehyde. Some of those trailers could get kind of dicey. But a couple of shows ago, I was talking about one of the families, a young kid in his 20s and his five kids and his wife in this trailer, and spending many hours with them, just educating him and his family about the rudiments of trying to really place a claim with your insurance company and looking for assistance from your government, the state OEM or the federal OEM. Which prompts me because, on a daily basis, I get this information floating out there. The media loves to talk about anniversaries. It's a news grabber for them. One of the things I just came across, njalert.gov, it's put on by the state superintendent of the state police here in Jersey. And what you do is you go to their website, and it's www.njalert.gov. In fact, I'm going to be having one of the orchestrators of that, Nicholas Morici, next week. He'll be my guest, and we'll talk about how they put that game plan into effect, and people can go to the website and get tips and tools of the trade, if you will. It's pretty interesting, interesting reading. They talk about the hurricanes and nor'easters and the small tropical storms and routes and how the police and other emergency responders, collaborate and get things in order. Because, obviously, I think ever since, you had 9/11, which was unexpected. Katrina, it was coming down the pike. We knew it was going to be bad. Unfortunately, as American citizens, you don't need to leave your property. Your house is your castle, however that phrase goes. So a lot of people did stay in New Orleans, unfortunately. So then you had the breakdown of those services, and you had first responders trying to help out, and it was just mass chaos. I got a couple of buddies that were down there, and I'm like I said, I uh, I did the hurricanes the year before, and I was away for 9 months. I wasn't about to do another tour down there and be away from my family. My wife had enough of that, so did my kids. So, you know, if you want to check out that website, it gives you, gives you some ideas of what would happen if the hurricane rolled through our area. And, you know, this comes on the heels just about in the midst of Earl's coming down. I think Curtis Lewis says Earl the Pearl. Hurricanes coming down the pike, so you might want to take a look at some of the preparedness tools that New Jersey State Police has got up on their njalert.gov. You also have your emergency supply kits. You know, this is another thing that OEM, Office of Emergency Management, there's the local, the state, and there's the federal OEM. And it goes, then I think I've been telling you about this for the last couple of weeks. You know, you got your gallon of water per person per day. I think it should be 2 gallons. I'm a crazy person for drinking water. Non-perishable goods, you know, flashlights, first aid kits, batteries, AM, FM radios, you know, batteries, battery backups also for the for your cell phone. And I guess if you can have your toiletry bag, that would be a good place to stage something, you know, you don't want to go around with the yellow teeth, that's for sure. Also, your emergency phone numbers. We all talk about that every time, every week I go over that. I'm, again, broken record on that. Also, your medication. You should have your backup on your medication, or at least, your dosages when you need to go to a CVS. Ooh, I just plugged them for no reason. They're not giving me any money. I shouldn't do that. But anyway, say car keys, some cash, credit card. Cash is better in a time of emergencies. I remember last, March, we had no ATM machines, so it's good to have a couple $100 on hand. I know it's a little difficult nowadays with this the economy, but, you know, a couple of bucks would be helpful. So we went with the batteries, we went the flashlights and the first aid kits and things like that. You know, it's not brain surgery. It really isn't. You also put on our president of the United States. He put out a little newsletter for preparedness. And this is the month, National Preparedness Month. He's got his advisors are telling him what he needs to empower the American people with. This is all done by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, if you will. Everybody knows that. That came into popular notes, if you will, from 9/11, and they've been in the forefront of handling disasters and such. Even in your local areas, your counties, I think it's in the Bergen County area and some of the Long Island counties. It's when three or four fire departments respond to one call, then they get a regional OEM director come in to oversee. And generally, those guys leave the chief in control, and they just kind of sit in the back and they kind of coordinate. So that's basically what Mr. Obama was trying to get out to us as Americans, what we should do. I mean, because, you know what? Bottom line, you can't always depend on your government. So you should have the little tools and the tricks and your supplies in case these things do happen. You know, you don't have to rely so much, you know. You know, the government's not your parents. You know, you need to be self-reliant on some things. So, again, there's a lot of things out there. You can go crazy on the website. The website's great. You know, the website's – I'm sorry, website, but the Internet is great because, you know, there's a lot of information out there. And there's also – the Internet is not great because it's got a lot of information out there. So, you know, I'm not a Chicken Little guy. I'm not going to say that the world's ending or anything along those lines. But, you know what? I go to these jobs, I go to these fires and floods and whatever, and I do repeat myself when I get on these jobs, and they have these things in place. So, again, like, I'm always reiterating preparedness, and I said some of those lists, you know, with the food some of these things are can openers. I don't know, you're drinking like an old 1973 Schlitz can of beer? I don't know, not a can opener, I don't know about that. There's a lot of important things that you need to do in case these disasters do happen. You know what? Also, you know what? Pets. Pets are an American way of life. So having food for them, and, you know, I remember downtown, you know, the 9/11 thing. They had a whole rescue squad just for pets, cats and dogs, and like, they came across a couple of exotic pets, and those people got in trouble, I'll tell you. With the Katrina thing only 5 years past, you know, a lot of people thought about, should we just let it die in the vine? I don't know. It's an American city. It's got lots of history. You got people. I mean, how do you just say, okay, you know what? It's not like Chernobyl, where, you know, behind the iron curtain, you know, you had nuclear waste and, you know, you can't live and you can't breathe and people are dying still as of, I think, today. What is that, 25 years or something like that? So, but I'm a fan of, you know, of a rebuilding because I like, I guess I'm a romantic along those lines, you know, a little love story kind of thing. You know what? You hit Skid Row after the hurricane and rebuild, get back in the game. You know, that's my opinion. Also, the you know, really, besides downtown, whatever, you know, Katrina really got a spur in volunteering. A lot of people in the country started volunteering. I think it's a great thing. I kind of almost think doing my job is almost like a volunteer thing. I really enjoy it. So, let's go to a station break. And this is Chris Plunkett, Disaster Recovery Hour, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Yeah, you're back to the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett, your host. The show is about reporting about disasters, and we also like to give you the tips and tools of the trade of if these things happen in your personal life or in your business life, neighborhoods or regions like it was this past year with the March 13th storm. I bring on many guests. Anything that pertains to mitigating emergencies, I had some good guests, and I got another great one today. His name is John Garmendi. John is an amateur radio operator, and I'm stumbling on my words today. That's an early Saturday morning, but John, I'm definitely curious. John found out about the program, and John has a lot of experience in emergency management and also reporting on disasters out in the field. Nowadays we all talk about we always talk about the cell phones and the internet and things like that. But there's one staple that I don't think a lot of people know about, right?
It's still
in existence, but there's the handheld radio and the amateur radio operators. John, good to have you. And why don't you go ahead and give me a little background?
Hey, Chris. Good morning. I want to say thanks first of all for you inviting me onto your show and into your studio this morning, and also thanks for allowing me to help you kick off Preparedness Month.
Yeah. This is we have a lot to talk about, and I know I have a lot to talk about with you, and I know you're going to be back on my show. National Preparedness. Everyone's hopped up about that. Unfortunately, I'm sure you agree with me. These disasters happen, and we talk about it, and then goes away after a couple months, and everyone forgets.
Yeah.
But, so why don't you give me talk about the amateur radios and the communications, and because you guys, you're behind the scenes. A lot of people don't realize that you guys are in the forefront of reporting a lot of this information to the larger media carriers.
Well, it's not only that, Chris, but it's also actually handling messages on behalf of a number of organizations. Amateur radio, I think the folks who are unfamiliar with it completely think it's either something to do with Morse code or something to do with CB radio. Yeah, exactly. But, the folks, so really today I'm hoping that we can, A, raise awareness of the general public of really what amateur radio is and how it can be a service to their local communities, and also hopefully raise awareness to some of the local emergency managers. Let them understand what kind of a resource they have in amateur radio. And, amateur radio operators do a lot. And, depending on what area a person wants to get into, it can just be a hobby where they talk, or it can really be something where they go out there and serve their communities. And a number of the agencies that we serve are people like the Red Cross, the Salvation Army. There's groups that just support the DOD. They call them MARS, Military Auxiliary Radio Service.
Okay.
There are folks who are into the weather and reporting of local weather conditions. They're part of a group called Skywarn. And then we have RACES, which is Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Services. That's at the state level. And then there's ARES, the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, which is run by a larger organization, the Amateur Radio Relay League.
So there must be some serious amount of schooling involved. And you have to be a natural coordinator.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about it is, there's certainly some studying that you're required to do in order to become a licensed radio amateur. Mm-hmm. And then as the people migrate towards the emergency communications end of it, they get involved in these various organizations. And we do things like have traffic handling nets where we actually role play and communicate based upon maybe some scenarios. We have drills, and the folks are really just trying to maintain and hone their skills so that when they do get asked to perform these services in an emergency situation, they're ready.
Okay. So now the state and the federal and the local situation happens, and they need your services. So you're working hand in hand. And now have you already had a plan in play with these? There's been a simulation with these groups? How they do the mock things like airplane crashes and things like that? Or like I was just seeing a couple of weeks ago, I was going through the Lincoln Tunnel, and they had about 15 vehicles, for drilling. This vehicle was for drilling at 15. So obviously they do these role playing, and I shouldn't besmirch say role playing as if it's insignificant. It's very, very important because, obviously practice makes perfect. Regarding you guys, when you role play, you're pretty significant also. It's part of the pizza, if you will, right?
Oh yeah, no question. we will do training and drills. We'll have different kinds of scenarios that will either be exclusively communications based, or we will do things as part of a larger drill that is something that's put together either at the county level, the state level, or you know some individual agency in the federal space.
Okay. So when you there's a drill going to happen, they call you up. And you come down as there. What's the kind of equipment that's involved with that?
Sure. Well, you know, the good thing is, and as you've been like preaching over the past few weeks and even at the beginning of the show, you know, it's all about preparedness. And one thing about amateur radio operators, you know, they're very much of the mindset that says, you know, we've got to be prepared for any number of scenarios. So most radio operators have a number of different radios at their disposal. They've got battery-powered equipment, generators, additional antennas, things that they can use to make antennas in an expedient manner. So we do a lot of things that help us to really exercise this equipment, test it out, make sure it works on a regular basis. And, you know, just like anyone else, we've got our go kit.
Right.
We've got
right.
Our handheld radios and our portable stuff. And, you know, it's not just the type of thing where there's an emergency, you show up. There's a structure. You know, all of these organizations have a structure mm-hmm. and a kind of a call out list. And a number of the organizations even require us to have ICS training. So the FEMA Incident Command mm-hmm. system training is something that is pretty universally accepted in the emergency management field. Mm-hmm. And it's good because it gives us the same type of the same type of vocabulary that the professionals are using.
Oh, yeah, right.
So we're talking a common language. Mm-hmm. We're following a common set of rules. And, again, there's a structure.
Mm-hmm. If you just join us, this is Chris Plunkett. I'm the host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. My guest today is John Garmendi. And we're talking about the ham radios and emergencies and how they are affiliated and also how they bring into how they're role-playing with the OEMs of the world, of the states and the local state and the local officials and FEMA and such. So now we talked about some of the tools that you're bringing in there. Give me a scenario. When let's use you know what? Let's use an example a couple of years ago. Remember that down in was it Parsippany or South Plainfield, that oil tanker ruptured? And we felt it up here in Bergen County, the shaking of the windows. So that kind of situation. Now, were you brought in that, or is it the similar situations? Now, if you were to be brought in something like that, if you weren't, what would transpire?
Well, you know, there'd be first of all an identification by the incident command staff for a need of to have some additional communications, and whether that's because their systems have become overloaded, mm-hmm. or because some of the more you know traditional systems were not functioning at the time, then they'll say, "All right, let's bring these resources in." And typically, they'll put us. You know, we certainly won't be in harm's way, right? You know, mm-hmm. you know the rule: don't create another victim, right?
Right.
They'll put us out of harm's way, but typically, we'll either assign amateur radio communicators to key locations where we can have access to the information that they wish to, you know, the emergency managers need to pass along, or we will get paired up with one of the emergency responders in some kind of a key role,
okay.
where as they're finding out information, we can then feed it back.
So now, is it similar to like when downtown happened when you had all that cross chatter between all the departments and the command? There was one command center inside the South Tower and the North Tower. You had a lot of going back, and I think it was an antiquated radio system. I think it's still on the forefront of downtown and some of the things that could have been helped. And the guys didn't have the right equipment. So was that similar to what you're assisting? Would you assist along those lines, or?
Well, we can help along those lines, and specifically because one of the things that I think is a real plus with respect to using amateur radio volunteers as communicators is that we have a great deal of tools in our toolkit with respect to the amount of frequencies we can cover and the modes of communication that we can use. So, for instance, Our frequencies cover from very low frequencies where we can enact long distance communications to higher frequency modes and methods that mm-hmm. will allow us for shorter range communication, as well as the ability to transmit not only voice communications but also data.
Okay.
And that can be really helpful, especially I know of Cape May County is using a digital system that allows them to be HIPAA compliant with respect to the transmission of maybe sensitive medical data.
Okay. This is Chris Plunkett. You're listening to Disaster Recovery Hour with my guest, John Gourmandy, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
You're back. It's Chris Plunkett, the Disaster Recovery Hour. My guest today is John Gourmandy. John's an amateur radio operator. You were listening to some commercials that pay the bills around here. One of the questions I was asking John is how does, you know, we have the internet, you have the cell phones, you have satellite radios. There's a lot of ways to communicate out there. And my question to John, and John is, is it a need for the amateur radio or that type of system still in play?
Hey, Chris, I would say emphatically yes. You know, all of those things are tools that we use day to day for communicating. And I mean, like the cell phone is just, you know, it's embedded in a lot of us at this point. And I don't think people can imagine being without it anymore.
Right.
However, you know, when we look back to things like 9/11 or even just as recently as the earthquake in Haiti, mm-hmm. Or, you know, some of the other disasters that were, you know, of recent memory, I think one of the things that gets overloaded very quickly is the cell phone system.
Mm-hmm, right.
And, you know, the ability to communicate becomes constricted because a lot of these systems just can't scale up to handle the amount of volume necessary for all of this emergency traffic. And that's where ham radio really comes into play.
I mean, we put a guy on the moon in 1969 and we still have blackout areas with the cell service. I can't comprehend that. But you know what? You sign a contract and you're in for 2 years. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
You just said what, ramping up or the capabilities of
Sure. It's to scale up the system. Sometimes it is very difficult to match the magnitude of a disaster, you know, to be able to handle the number of people who need to speak for whatever reason. Quickly overloads those kinds of systems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, the ARRL even had a campaign a couple of years ago. The ARRL is the American Radio Relay League, which is really the organization that a majority of licensed hams belong to. And, you know, they had a campaign a couple of years ago that just said, when all else fails, ham radio.
Really?
And, you know, the reason being is that We are always there, and as I said in the earlier segment, we've got a lot of tools at our disposal. You know, we can use different modes of communication. We can communicate via voice or using digital modes. Again, I mentioned that there was a group down in Cape May who's using something in conjunction with the hospital. And because it's digital, they are HIPAA compliant. So if they have to transmit sensitive medical data, they can do so.
Gotcha. Right.
You know, it's multifaceted, and we do things with digital modes that can communicate data even in a non-disaster, but at least keeps us prepared. For instance, down on the Raritan River, a group called the Raritan Bay Radio Amateurs mm-hmm. have set up some amateur radio flood level sensors along the area of the South River mm-hmm. and Raritan River so that they can constantly monitor the height of that river as it starts to approach flood stage, and it can communicate that information to the local emergency management folks and coordinators.
I guess just like they have those pods out through the ocean, you know, for tsunamis, but those are beamed up through the satellite, and they can get the readings off mm-hmm. that way, right?
Yeah.
But this is just the same importance, just not as, I guess, glamorous, if you will. Like, you know, they throw it on a television and say, look, we got these things below the ocean, and it's going to keep us safe now. Yeah, until the power system goes down, and then the only ones left is going to be the amateur radio guys, and they'll be the ones really helping us.
Indeed, yeah.
Now, you know, I have to ask you this, because, you know, when I was a kid, there was a guy who had this huge antenna on his house, and he was like the mad scientist of the neighborhood, you know?
Yep.
I know people are out there saying, oh, come on, what's with this guy? He's got the hand, you know, trying to tune into Tokyo radio, right? But it's funny, you know, with all these, you know, when Hollywood puts on these movies about disasters and all the systems fail, it's always the guy who was, you know, who was always there the whole time. He was always just doing his job, doing the right thing. And that's, to me, you're conveying it to me. I'm sure you're conveying it to the listeners. Is, you know, you guys are always there. You know,
yeah.
So it's not something that could fail. I mean, everything could fail. We're fallible. We're human beings. I understand that. But the system in place that you guys and constantly do, where you're talking about, is like you're training all the time. You guys are going to be the eyes and ears.
Absolutely. And it's again, it's a resource. You know, when we think of a natural resource in this country, we think of oil, we think of coal, we think of, you know, all these other kinds of agriculture and so on. People forget that RF, the radio spectrum, that too is a natural resource. And the amateur radio folks take it very seriously that we're very much, along with the regulating agencies, like stewards of that resource. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, amateur radio is not just a way for two people to have a conversation, although it could be simply that. If
right.
two guys just want to talk to each other about the weather, they can do so as long as they're both licensed. However, we're a pool of volunteers, those of us who choose to become involved in emergency communications, mm-hmm. really become a resource to the country. You know, it's called the Amateur Radio Service,
mm-hmm.
and that's how we do look upon ourselves as a service, as a resource to the emergency managers out there.
Okay. If you just tuned in, you're halfway through the show, so you missed some of it. You can go on my website and check it out at the end of the week, cppems.com. This is the Apple again. This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett, and my guest today is John Grimendi, and we're talking about ham radios. And don't get frightened by it, people, because I'll tell you right now, these guys are the people who are going to keep us in touch when situations go south. One of the things I'm always curious about is now I know it's a volunteer thing. Is it a club also? Like, is that how it came into fruition about the amateur radio volunteers and things? But initially started out like as a club that you join and.
Yeah, I mean, typically, amateur radio operators will congregate together in formal clubs,
mm-hmm.
and typically those clubs support what we call repeaters. And repeaters allow us in the VHF and UHF frequencies typically to extend our distance of communication. So we'll transmit into a radio repeater, which is within our transmitting distance.
Mm-hmm.
That repeater, in turn, will receive our signal and rebroadcast it out further. So in order to maintain those repeaters, which are licensed, it typically takes, you know, both technical and money resources, you know, financial resources,
right.
to keep them running. So clubs sprout up around that in different geographic areas, and they're in the tri-state area here. There are tons of amateur radio clubs.
Yeah.
Now, the largest club, quote-unquote club, it's really more of an organization.
When I say club, I should say really organization. Excuse me for saying club.
The largest organization and the most popular is the ARRL, the American Radio Relay League, which is headquartered in Newington, Connecticut. And it's a multifaceted organization in that it is our voice on behalf of all its members. Our voice to the FCC.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a legislative division.
Right, okay, that's
there's an education division where we get training. There's a licensing assistance division. And there's also an emergency communications group that they've put together called ARES. And again, ARES has a structure with a national leadership,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and then there's a regional leadership and an area leadership.
Yeah, that's my question is, like, you know, we have county OEM directors, and you have the state guys who are dealing with the federal guys. So the structure is similar with yours. So let's just use whatever county. We got 21 counties over here in Jersey. I don't know how many, 50 some odd in county in New York too. So that particular county OEM director, he knows the person who's going to be handling the radio system on in your world, your situation. He knows that person prior and is part of his. Like we all say about the toolkit to have to be prepared for disasters. So that's part of, hey, you're just as important as having an engineer putting some water out on the fire. So communication is the key to everything. You know, people always say, yeah, communication. It is actually, you should repeat it all the time. It's key. And anytime that something goes south, it's always, well, the communication wasn't there. There was a breakdown in communication. But you're that backup. And you know what? A lot of people obviously don't know about this. And I'm glad I met you. I'm glad you reached out for me because this is fascinating stuff. So why don't we talk about some of the recent disasters you guys worked on and how you coordinate that? Because it looks to me, I mean, it's like a team of guys are coming down and there's a guy in one spot and you set out to field the guys and that's how it's played out, correct?
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's varied, and a lot of times, just like ICS is a system that's applied to disasters, but doesn't necessarily have to be, right? Incident command system can be used at, you know, a parade or, you know, any kind of mm-hmm. event. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the same with ham radio. Yes, obviously, when we're talking about emergency communications, I mean, I've got a list here. There's World Trade Center, of course, right. Kentucky floods, Colorado wildfires in 2002, Northeast blackout 2003, tsunami mm-hmm. in Asia. Right. Wildfires in Texas, San Diego, Hurricane Katrina, Hawaii earthquake, and the earthquake in Haiti just last year. Mm-hmm. There are any number of events that would utilize ham radio as a resource. So, for instance, with the earthquake in Haiti, a group of guys from what we call MARS, the Military Auxiliary Radio System, were embedded with a group of emergency medical doctors.
MARS also in a state police vehicle, vehicle arrest records.
And they were sent down to Haiti, and they went on their own. They brought their own gear. They set up, and they handled a significant amount of health and welfare as mm-hmm. well as medical-related traffic back and forth from Haiti to the States. As I said before, it doesn't only have to be a disaster or an emergency. There are a large number of dedicated amateur radio operators who every year serve at the New York City Marathon. So they're providing communications all along that route for the entire duration of that race, and it's a big part of making that race run smoothly.
Yeah. This is Chris Plunkett, the Disaster Recovery. Are you listening to Disaster Recovery? I'm talking with John Grimenti. Let's go to a little break, and we'll be back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Now you're back. This is Chris Plunkett. Still Chris Plunkett after 40-some-odd minutes. So this is the Disaster Recovery Hour. My guest today is John Grimenti. If you want to catch some of this information, this will be up on our website. If you haven't tuned in early enough and you want to hear the whole pod, you can go to my website, cppems.com. There's also a link to John and his affiliate at arrl.org. He can expand, give you a little more background, a little more involved, in-depth background. One of the things everyone needs credibility, okay? If you make ice cream for a living or you sell hot dogs, and you better eat ice cream and you better eat hot dogs. Otherwise, people aren't going to give you any credibility for selling those types of products. For me, I've had some – I found an industry where it's self-gratifying. I get pleased at the end of the day. I know I did the right thing, and I'm a big Boy Scout when it comes to doing the right thing. It's like smiling. It doesn't take that much. It's not that much out of your day to smile and say thank you. A little more simple things in life that people should apply. But you've heard me talk about stories about losses, as we say in the insurance world, or disasters and emergencies, and so on. John, I've talked about some of my situations. Why don't you give me, something that still sticks? That's something that you were proud to be associated with, and things that you helped out. Because it seems like the sense of urgency, like my other guests, it's instilled in me. Why don't you give me a little something?
Gosh, sure, Chris. Without giving too much of the way of details, right? We were involved as a group a number of years back in Central New Jersey, where we were asked to assist in a search for a lost child. He had been, gone missing now for almost a week or so. And what they did was they had assigned an amateur radio operator with each group of individuals that were going out searching various areas in this town. And it was good because we were able to provide communications back to the central point of what had been covered, what areas hadn't been covered, what areas needed more resources to be brought by. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the instances. Another was a relatively significant structure fire was in an industrial complex where the communications established was on scene for a couple of days, and it required us to be able to really rotate out in shifts and provide communications to the various disaster recovery organizations there, and back to their headquarters to bring resources in the way of whether it's blankets or more water or any number of types of
keep it going
resources for both the emergency responders as well as the victims.
So regarding the missing child, so if there's a team of say 15 or 20 search and R guys, search and rescue guys, one of say, let's just for layman's purposes, put a, your guys who's with that group, and then there's another group, and there's several other groups, and you're basically, okay, we did this sector, we came up clear, or we didn't, we possibly found something, some evidence, so on. That's going to be relayed to the other five or six radio operators, and then so that's a collective back to the HQ, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be making some eyes the situation from there. That's really the premise of how that whole thing works, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and like I say, I mean, depending on the organization, right, there is varying levels of structure. So, RACES has one type of structure. ARES, the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, they have another type of structure. And but the important thing is just to know that there is a structure. It's not just show up with your radio kind of thing and start talking. People have roles, and hopefully they know their roles because they've drilled and gone through exercises and trainings and nets and so on.
Yeah, which leads me into the preparedness and the training. It reminds me of Katrina 5 years ago and the breakdown of those social services and so on and so forth. If somebody was running for mayor of that city or the state of Louisiana or anywhere else, it's very difficult to get Americans to spend money for preparedness. It's like they because it's not in their face. This is my opinion. Okay, just my opinion is that. And I saw some literature and I saw some dollar figures attached. It costs for layman's purposes, it's $1 for preparedness. Now, when a disaster happens and there's no preparedness, it costs $12 to execute all that other stuff. People think, they're out there, the weekend warriors are doing, or they're drilling and they're wasting taxpayer money. That's not the case at all. I mean, at least the way I look at it, and I know you've been in the emergency service business for 20 some odd years at this point. Frontline, first responder type of stuff. For me, being prepared is really saving dollars down the line.
There's no question about it, and I think that the local emergency managers, the township OEM coordinators, the county OEM coordinators, in many respects, there's no better value. There's no better deal than an amateur radio operator as an emergency communicator, because we're free by law. We have to be.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot accept money to do what we do. And we come with our own equipment. And so really, as I said before, it's a pool of trained resources that a lot of them do have ICS training already. That if there are emergency managers at the local level that are listening to us now that are unaware of these resources in their towns, by all means, they should reach out. They should reach out to the ARRL, try to find out who are the amateur radio operators in their township. Call a meeting. Get them in. Have them become part of the CERT team. And really just try to work them into their individual emergency operations plans.
Right. My guest a couple of weeks ago, Dan O'Brien from Academy Electric and Electrical Power Systems, need to plug that because he's a hell of a guy. But he and I know each other for years, and it's one of those things. He and I have spoken to higher-ups in the OEM world, and volunteers and even private contractors could be very helpful along those lines, because you can only have there's only so many people out there.
Mm-hmm.
So and a lot of these directors are the fire chiefs in their own town and the OEM director in their town and so on and so forth. So they're wearing a lot of hats. These volunteers. A buddy of mine who just got who was the chief, that guy was never home. And that's volunteer service.
Yeah.
I don't think Americans really realize the importance and the commitment to volunteer on that standpoint. If you're just tuning in, you're late. And this is Chris Plunkett, Disaster Recovery Hour. Today, my guest is John Garmendi, amateur radio operator. And it's been a pleasure. So why don't you give a little background on how people can get a hold of you and get some more information. And there's a website and so on.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, as I mentioned a number of times, they're really the – the one of the largest organizations of amateur radio operators in the United States, of which, by the way, there's about 690,000 licensed amateur radio operators in the United States.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing, yeah?
Yeah.
The good news along those lines is, you know, again, you may think back to the old days of the guy with the huge tower in his backyard and the Morse code coming out of his house at, you know, all hours and going onto your TV and all that stuff.
Gray hair, thick lips.
Well, you know, the good news is, number one, the FCC has done away with all Morse code requirements to get an amateur radio license. So that's number one. Number two, if you go up and just go on the web and take a look at ARRL.org, ARRL.org, mm-hmm. You can go up there and get a tremendous amount of information on how to find classes, how to find testing services, and how to become a licensed amateur radio operator. And you can go up, get together with a group, study, take the test, and you can get your call sign. I'm November 2 Delta Victor, N2DV. And
I'm sure people are wondering, like, what does that license plate mean?
Exactly,
It was a great time. It was a great pleasure meeting you, and I'm definitely having you on again, because we have other things that really correlate. Again, that sense of urgency. This is Chris Plunk, the host of Disaster Recovery Hour. If you want to ask me questions or email me or whatever, you can go to my website, cppems.com, and also see Plunkett at cppems.com. That's my email address. Another week down. Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and God bless our country, and bring our guys and girls home from the war. Take care.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.